We're working overtime on the seduction line. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 1990 AM. Triple in for Tiffany on this Friday.
Pop your collars and drop your dollars. Rob Tribble today.
Oh, Mr. Young Squid with management boy over there. You're kind of brooding and disagreeable today. What's wrong with you?
Young Squid is his name.
You wake up on the wrong side of the slab? What's going on?
What is
this? I can't with you today. No, I'm in a great mood, actually.
I can tell.
Other than having to be surrounded by an offensive lineman and a relief pitcher, I'm great.
I was a spot starter.
Think of how we feel.
A spot starter? Oh, you're the best, Rob.
Yeah. Spot starter and a swing tackle.
It's Friday, man. Mike and I have both been affected by road work coming in, and I have nothing wrong. I don't hold grudges against any of the road work. I understand. I appreciate the fact that it's getting done, but I don't know. It's just that I had to go north today to go south.
Sounds like Atlanta.
Yeah. Because my exit was – And I guess I did get a warning, but I didn't get a warning until I was at the exit. The exit was closed, the ramp, get on south. So I had to go up 575, one exit, which is luckily only literally like half a mile, maybe three quarters of a mile, to come back down south. So it took an extra couple minutes. But I'm sitting there at dinner last night after we played a little golf, and the World Series starts tonight, Rob. And my neighbor is a diehard Yankees fan. Now, when I say diehard, he doesn't watch every game, but he's a Yankees fan.
And where's he from, Columbus?
No, he's from Jersey.
Okay.
He was born in up there, and then he moved to Orlando.
You're the Cowboys of Major League Baseball, the bandwagoners.
Well, there are a lot of them. And then, so me and my other neighbor were talking, and I'm sitting next to the guy that's a Yankees fan. I forgot. My other neighbor's a Braves fan. And we're talking about how bad we hate the Yankees and we're going to pull for the Dodgers to win the World Series. And I look over and I go, hey, who's in the World Series? He's like, dude, I know. He's like, trust me, that's what we're doing tonight. We're watching the World Series. And I felt kind of bad because he pulled for the Braves in 21 when the Braves were in it.
Yeah.
He sat there and watched every game with us. As soon as the World Series was over, came over and we drank some Wellers and we celebrated. And I just kind of felt bad that I'm like, yeah, I hate the Yankees. I hope they lose. And I was kind of conflicted for a moment. Am I the a-hole that I don't pull for his team when he pulled for mine?
No, because I don't like the Yankees either. But when I was a kid, this series would have meant everything.
Yeah.
It is so glamorous and iconic. And as a Braves fan, last time they played was 1981. As a Braves fan, 1981, I was locked in because the Braves were so terrible. And I was like, wow, this is so glamorous. I wish I could never conceive of the notion of the Braves even getting there, being allowed behind that velvet rope of elite baseball teams. Of course, they won the division next year under Joe Torre. But now I'm like, I'll peek at it. If I see Ohtani in the on-deck circle, I'll tune in to see that at bat. You know,
This World Series to me highlights everything I hate about most sports business models. And I've talked about it a number of times on here. The NFL is the best product in the world because it's the fairest.
Yeah.
Right? You just don't have that in most other sporting leagues throughout the world. You don't have the hard salary cap and everything else that comes along with that. And yet, I hate seeing big market teams buy their way into these kind of situations. Now, you still have to go out and perform, and you still have to go out and stay healthy. But it's frustrating for me. You know, I prefer the way the Braves do it or some of the other smaller market teams.
Well, you know, when the Yankees were winning all those titles in, what, the 40s, 50s, 60s, the rest of Major League Baseball was like their bona fide minor league system.
Yeah.
They just go out and take anyone they want. Well, that explains the dominance.
I still like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not that far off. They just have more competition in that realm from teams like the Dodgers and the Mets sometimes and the Padres and other teams that try to go out and pay these exorbitant contracts that – I mean, Shohei Ohtani's contract's what, $700 million or whatever? I mean, who else is going to be able to pay that?
Can launch his own space program.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Man, it's going to be a beautiful weekend, gentlemen. We got the One Music Fest going on over there and right over there off North Avenue. What is that? What, Cardi B, Earth, Wind, and Fire. I think there's only like three of those original guys left, though. We got Method Man. I'm going to the Benteen Park Festival tomorrow over there near Grant Park. Just a regular fall festival, but they have professional wrestling, minor league wrestling.
Kidding.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. It's so absurd and hilarious.
Did you guys, The other day, Bo, you might have seen it. I retweeted a video on Twitter where I think it was Jake the Snake and Macho Man, and the snake bites him in the ring back in like 91. Like, what a classic moment.
Yeah, I didn't see your tweet, but I do remember that video. Yeah. And it's because I'm not a snake, I'm not fans of snakes.
Yeah, no, yeah, bro.
And so it used to freak me out that he would let Damien out and let it crawl all over his victims. I say his victims, but like his opponents after he beat them. But I've never been more freaked out in my entire life than when I was a kid and I watched the Ultimate Warrior go into the funeral parlor and Paul Bearer interview, and the Undertaker attacks him from behind and locked him in a casket.
That was real fear.
And they're like, man, they're trying to pry the casket open, and I mean, like, freaked me out. And they finally get it open, and the casket's ripped up with claw marks, and the Ultimate Warrior was like kind of passed. I mean, I tell you, dude, that nothing freaked me out in pro wrestling more than
wrestling,
that moment,
baby. There was nothing better, man. Nothing
the most
better.
Impressive thing about the Ultimate Warrior, that physique was all natural. It was all natural. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
That was he wasn't a very well-liked guy in the locker room.
I can see that. Well, the roid rage and the acne.
A lot of it apparently had to do with, because I don't watch it anymore.
I don't either.
But what I will do is I'll watch every bleeping documentary about the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s.
I don't want to watch the documentaries.
I do. I love it. I love hearing the inside stuff about.
Well, they're all dead.
Well, not all of them. Hold on, not all of them.
You know what I mean.
But yeah, no, a lot of guys in that era did pass away, but they said he just wouldn't play ball. He wasn't a very professional guy. He went in there and had like 90-second matches, and a lot of them didn't like him because he wasn't one of them. He was just a bodybuiler that wrestled. But anyways, Rams Vikings last night, entertaining game.
Uh-oh. The Vikings panicking. They've lost two in a row. No, they haven't. They beat the Lions. Wait a minute. They lost to the Lions. Yeah, they've lost two in a row.
And that's what happens in those short weeks. Look, they've been in both game last night. The Rams were at full strength for the first time.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua back.
Dude, Puka, he just catches everything.
He's a dog.
Got me 18 points last night.
The wide receiver display last night was insane. Yep. Justin Jefferson goes over 100 last night as well.
See that catch he made on the sideline?
Yeah. I mean, the ability of Puka to catch a ball in stride, in traffic, and never break stride and never slow down, never loses momentum is insane. And Matthew Stafford's ability to put it right on his chest is equally as insane. When you look at some of those little quick slants and little seams he runs, it's nuts, dude. It's crazy. He looks like he's going to get his head taken off at any minute, and he's just like, no, I'm just going to keep running full speed.
He kind of slithers free for another 2-3 yards, man. And the Vikings, you feel like that's the most complete team in the NFL? I mean, what do they have, like 24 sacks, 11 interceptions, or top of all the statistical categories as far as that goes? But
yeah, but
it just shows you.
That interception that Stafford threw last night, I looked at Mike and I said, hold on, was there pressure here? Let's go rewatch this. No. He just overthrows a guy. I'm like, we never get just an overthrown interception. Like, I feel like we never get the easy play that works out in our favor. But the Puka Nacua is living proof that human error is alive and well in the NFL draft. He made it to the fifth round. It's just incredible. Then again, though, Drake London is living proof that, you know what? Sometimes they know what they're doing. Bijan Robinson, because Drake, don't look now, but shade under 500 yards and less than 50 catches.
All right, Mike, you asked a question about Sunday.
I did, man.
What was that question?
Which team is under more pressure to win on Sunday? Which one is it?
We're gonna dive into that and do all the nuance and all the things coming up next. It's a Falcons Friday, a Fair or Foul Friday on the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift, Triple M for Tiffany Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Atlanta United in Miami tonight. Best of three aggregate thing in the playoffs as far as that goes. Improbable victory in Montreal and just getting into the playoffs altogether for Atlanta United. But, well, the planets all met last weekend, enabled them to get that date up there in Montreal. World Series Game 1, East Coast, West Coast. South got nothing to say in the World Series. College football this weekend, noon tomorrow in Blacksburg, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech. Maybe Georgia Tech can embrace the notion of playing solid special teams. We shall see. Georgia off, so they get ready to take on Florida. You were exhilarated after that Kentucky victory, right? It's like anything you can get at this juncture.
you almost got me to say some words that I'm not supposed to say.
Oh, dear.
According to the FCC. But, yeah, I think it was Mike Conte. We were before the Falcons game Sunday. I said, this is the point. This is where I'm at in life, where a Kentucky win gets me excited. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when your team shows up and they do things differently than they've been doing, it's fun to see. It's kind of, with all due respect, I think that's kind of what we've seen the last, what, month with Atlanta United? Or at least three games where they've done, you know, they kept themselves around, and then all of a sudden they hit a little burst where they're all of a sudden playing above their heads, it feels like. Where they're doing the things they didn't do all year, like score timely goals and, you know, make timely saves and be clutch. And that's kind of what I saw from Florida against Kentucky. The defense made stops. They tackled well. They turned the ball over. And the offense capitalized on it. So it was just fun to see. And, you know, you never know. That's what sports is, unpredictable, Rob.
It is.
Like you.
I am. I'm a wild card to that.
I love that about you, actually.
All right, Mr. Johnson, you asked the notion which team is under more pressure. 4-3 Falcons visiting 4-3 Tampa Bay, both teams with three losses, both teams with one NFC loss and two AFC losses, so they're basically identical as far as all tie-breaking scenarios.
Except for
the head-to-head.
That's right, in the division.
Yeah,
the division.
And I think that's an important part of this conversation, right, and thinking about it kind of on the way in this morning, you know, kind of weighing where the Falcons are at, because I think that this is a critical game. I think it's a critical game for both teams. I do look at Tampa and probably think they are under a little more pressure. I think Atlanta's under a pressure from the fan base to kind of get right in a couple of categories, right? You want to see offensive efficiency. You want to see the third down, you know, numbers continue to climb. You want to see your ability to defend the pass on all levels continue to kind of evolve, your ability to defend the run. Tampa, when you look at it and coming off losing their two biggest stars, and also the fact that Atlanta already has the tiebreaker against them, you feel like you have to get this one at home, I think, if you're Tampa Bay and you have eyes at all on winning the division.
And Tampa Bay's got to go to Kansas City next week.
Yes. And here's the thing. I'll say this. If Tampa wins, and I have to pull back up the schedule for me, I remember thinking it yesterday. If Tampa were to win, it's almost like you don't even care what happens the next couple of weeks if you're a Tampa fan, because you got a bye week coming up. You're going to play Kansas City, but it's like, you know, it is what it is. And then they're down the stretch after their bye week. It's not awful for them. They have a couple of opportunities out there with the way their schedule kind of lines up at the back end. So, but I do think that there is a lot weighing on this game for Tampa. I think they're going to throw everything they have at this game, and I think unfortunately for them, they are missing their two biggest stars, and that's going to be an uphill climb.
How many times have you seen, especially if you're a Falcons fan, you go play a team, they're hobbled, they're missing two or three of their biggest stars per se. And somehow through hook or crook, something weird happens, and that team that's hobbled ends up beating the Falcons.
Oh, we're star makers. The Atlanta Falcons have been star makers, dude. There's no doubt about it. Am I wrong about that?
I think
star makers.
I would love to go sit in another city for maybe a season and see how fans feel about their teams, because I feel like the Braves are star makers. Every time the Braves play a new pitcher,
that's right.
They face a new pitcher. The guy looks like Fernando Valenzuela against them. Like, he's like, you've never heard of the guy, and all of a sudden he's throwing, you know, eight scoreless in his first outing. And you're like, what the hell is going on here? With the way the game was, where 66 total points was scored in the last outing, you went into overtime. The offense is 500 yards of offense from 500 yards of passing from Kirk Cousins. And, you know, Baker Mayfield was a pedestrian, 19 of 24 for 180 yards and three touchdowns. Do you feel like this game might be a slow grind?
Oh, yeah.
Like the over-under for this game, I was just looking at these over-unders, and there's some crazy over-unders.
Is it 41 or something like that?
45.5.
Mm.
I almost want to take the under, because I think, you know what?
Yeah, what goes there's, up must come down.
There's no way that they just have a dial-a-score game again, right?
No. But with their two best receivers out, and Tampa Bay's discovered their running game.
Yeah, you know? and we have too as of late. We've ran the ball well as of late too.
Two and a half hour game on Sunday.
I'm just so curious, to your point, what their plan is for Vita Vea, because he did control Ryan Neusel, and with Ryan Neusel hobbled and there are questions around him, there's got to be a game plan for how you want to attack that. I can't imagine
run away from him.
Well, and that's the thing. I think usually wide zone, which we are known for, is kind of meant to attack guys like Vita Vea. It's like, well, you can't cover sideline to sideline. And then he kind of disrupted everything we were trying to do with that last time out. So I can't imagine they go back in with the same game plan and say, Ryan, you just got to play better. You know what I mean? Like, that's probably not a good idea. So I did notice that Baltimore, not specifically last week, Baltimore started to implement some of their Wham-style plays where you kind of crack back on interior defensive linemen with, like, your H-back, like a Charlie Warner. I think that would be kind of cool to see. I don't know that we do any of that or even have that in the game plan or the system, period. But that's kind of how you could go about doing it. But it just – the things that you usually do to get dominant defensive linemen – off kilter like that, we don't do a ton of. And I'm talking about, you know, running back screens and draws and things like that. It's just seldom sprinkled in.
And I think, to me, that's my number one key offensively, is figure out how to block 50. That is the, if you ask me what's the number one thing we got to do on offense, get a hat on 50. Don't let him change the game, because guess what? He got a sack last time. I know it was a weird thing where Bijan somehow got maxed up on him. But, and it's not supposed to happen, but to me, he's the difference maker, because he opens everything up for guys like Levante David and KJ Britt and Yaya Diaby, like, you know, Tyron Shoyinka. Like, it is all about how you handle Vita Vea and Kalijah Kancey up front, and then it completely opens everything up for those guys. So get a hat on him. That's my number one thing to do. And if I was on... If you ask me defensively, what do you got to do? Got to slow down that three-headed monster.
Imagine Bijan Robinson being confronted with the notion of Vita Vea. It's like, good
oh,
Lord.
He was confronted with it. Yeah. He opted out, which I don't blame him. It didn't sound like Raheem Morris blamed him either. It was like just one of those things we've kind of covered. It's like you have rules built in, and the defense's job is to build in a situation where they can take advantage of your rules. You know what I mean? And kind of vice versa. It's like, well, we know they're going to – looks like when they get A-gap pressure, they'll just squeeze down right there. Let's see if we can put Vita Vea in that B-gap. Oh, my God. Bijan's like, no, thanks. I'm good. Just go ahead and hit Kirk. You're good.
And it was kind of like when, you know, we were talking about wrestling earlier. It's kind of like when The Undertaker threw Mankind off the Hell in a Cell. That's what it looked like when Vita Vea came at Bijan Robinson. It was just like, oh,
Bijan
God.
Was like, nah,
there's carnage.
Business decision. Nobody blamed him, man. That's a guy that weighs twice as much as you do.
What about Buccaneers defense? Are you talking about issues with the Falcons? I mean, the Ravens lit them up for, what, 508 yards? How many yards the Falcons have in that overtime game? 509 by Kirk, so it's got to be approaching 600 yards, too.
Yeah, you had 70-something on the ground. Yep. No, look, they got – they haven't – they're as good as they – they're, like, in the top 10 in every number offensively that matters.
Yeah.
Scoring, you know, rushing production, passing production, third downs. You flip it over and – they're at the bottom half of the league in every defensive category. They're allowing 132 yards on the ground, over 250 through the air. They're not getting teams off the field on third down. Their red zone defense is actually middle of the pack.
Well, they play the exact same style that we always talk about. A lot of teams in the NFL are playing.
Yeah, basically, bend, don't break.
We'll let you get to the red zone. Sure. Yeah, you can just walk to the red zone pretty much, but – it's
that's
gonna,
when
we're
we clamp
down
inside
down
the 20. Yep.
Now they are plus one in the turnover, so they're doing well there. They're causing fumbles, and they're picking the ball off. But honestly, we are too. I mean, we're doing an okay job. We're not the best, but we've got five interceptions already this year. We couldn't say that last year.
Or no.
Well, maybe other than Jesse Bates.
Maybe we'll get Bad Baker again this week. Maybe 2 weeks in a row of Bad Baker. Because Bad Baker turned the ball over last week against the Ravens.
Rob had the stat earlier. His first five games, two interceptions.
Yeah.
His last two?
Was it?
Five.
Five, yeah.
So he's in this pressing turn the ball over mode.
Yeah, here's your red zone stat for Tampa. 41.5% of the drives against Tampa, against their defense, have gone to the red zone. That's the third worst mark in the league behind the Panthers and the Cardinals. So you're basically, it's like, yeah, cool, man. Like, you're going to throw underneath. You're not going to be as deep, but you're probably going to make it to the red zone if you don't break a tackle and go the distance. And then we'll try to stop you when we get down there.
How concerned are you with the Ryan Neusel situation? How much of a step down you got to deal with Vita Vea right there in front of you, whoever's snapping the ball?
I don't think I'd be terribly concerned if it wasn't for the fact that he already struggled with Vita Vea.
Yep.
He struggled with him. I mean, in the run game, you go back and look, he got ragdolled a couple times. And that's a tough block, man, and he's already kind of an undersized guy. Strong,
what is,
you know.
What is Vita Vea, 350?
Yeah.
Well, that's what he's listed at.
Right. You know.
Yeah, you know, but I'd have coaches that would say he's a biscuit short of 400. Yeah. And he's already struggled, so that's what worries me. If it was just simply Ryan Neusel, you know, he's banged up a little bit, you got a tough defensive lineman front, I'd be go, it is what it is. You know, go out there and play ball. But what I saw last time, they got to have a game plan for that, man.
All right, coming up, oh, by the way, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, coming up next, Week 9 college football. First place in the SEC on the line, and it doesn't involve either Georgia or Alabama. What planet are we on? What dimension are we existing in? Good Lord! It's coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio 1990 Game. Fourth Saturday in October. A huge one in the SEC, and it's not involving either Alabama or Georgia. Texas A&M hosting LSU. Texas A&M a 2.5-point favorite at home. And, gentlemen, this is a fascinating matchup. LSU has shown they can win shootouts or they can win close games. Texas A&M's offensive line, they're like one of the best offensive lines in the country. They're not letting opposing teams get to their quarterback. Something's got to give tomorrow. LSU can be very disruptive, too. As far as defensively speaking, this is going to be – that vibe at Kyle Field tomorrow night is going to be something. I would love to go to a game there.
Oh, I would too. Texas A&M is very good up front on defense too.
Yeah.
They've got a couple of guys coming off the edge that can get after you. And Nussmeier, he'll throw it to you. So, you know, I just wonder if they can get enough pressure early, Mike, and maybe make him uncomfortable and get him throwing – if he can throw the ball to you a couple of times, if you're A&M, you might be set up to kind of really hammer down on them.
Yeah, you are. And honestly, both of these teams are very, very good, but have a little bit of inconsistent quarterback play. And Garrett Nussmeier he's been extremely good. Don't get me wrong. His ability to kind of throw it downfield and hit some of the longer plays and make explosives. But you're right. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. He's a little bit of like last year's Sam Howell for the Commanders, where it's like, dude, I'm going to get 400, but I'm going to give you one. Like, I'm going to give you one over the middle. Connor Wegman kind of the same way. Some weeks, Connor Wegman for Texas A&M looks like a Heisman candidate. And other weeks, it's like he just completely goes away and plays extremely inconsistently and makes some bad decisions. So this is kind of a show-me game. Like, if you want to prove that you're a top-five caliber team after, you know, losses earlier in the year that both of these teams sustained out of conference, then show me, right? Show me that you've kind of improved as a team over the last few weeks and that you're ready to make your appearance in the SEC title game.
LSU's got to prove they can run the ball. They haven't been really good in short yardage situations either running the ball. I don't mean they can't, but that certainly hasn't emerged yet.
It's just so weird to me, the brand of LSU. The brand that LSU has been under Brian Kelly is so foreign, where they're throwing, it's like, we're going to score 40 points. I don't know how much we're going to run the ball, you know, if it's not the quarterback. The running backs seem like the last couple of years are kind of secondary, and we're also going to have a defense that's going to give up 40. Like, it just, like, when did that happen at LSU, man? Like, it just seems like that has completely flip-flopped from what it was 10 years ago when you had Leonard Fournette and he was going to run it down your throat and they were going to hold you to like 6 points.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole, I mean, everybody does it now. Like the whole conference, the whole SEC plays defense and no one else does thing is kind of gone by the wayside.
Yeah, it has.
Other than Georgia and Alabama to a lesser extent these days and still at times, nobody plays defense really in the SEC. You go to the Big Ten, and I'm not a Big Ten guy, you know that, but they play a lot more. Their defenses have been better. You look at Iowa last year. Iowa had one of the best defenses in the country. And
They had to,
but it wasn't just because they played in the Big Ten, though. They had a good Penn State's got a pretty good defense this year. But it's just adapting to you want to blame Lane Kiffin.
So
because when Lane Kiffin went to Alabama, it kind of made that switch where teams started scoring more points. I'm not blaming it
all.
They
were late to the party, though.
I know.
You're talking about Gus Malzahn going to Auburn and like all those other things.
But that's when it kind of transitioned. Florida's the same way. Florida used to be a known – Florida and LSU used to be two of the best defensive teams year in and year out in the SEC and in the country. Neither one of them are anymore.
What was Gus Malzahn's big innovation? Remember, he was that high school coach. They won a bunch of state titles.
Yeah, I mean, it was just – it was.
You know what it was for me? You tell me what you think about this. I feel like he ran Paul Johnson's offense out of the shotgun with a little bit more throwing.
Yeah, I mean, but even then, back then, he wasn't a huge RPO guy until his time at head coach with Nick Marshall. Like, that was when really the RPO kind of thing kind of came out, where Nick would kind of throw it into the flat after running the zone read, you know what I mean?
He'd
throw it out to the wide receiver that was behind the line of scrimmage. The whole downfield RPO thing wasn't really much of his either. He was just an innovator in terms of, I think, to me anyways, north and south running game with guys like Kerryon Johnson. What was that, 6-7 years ago at Auburn? And also ability to kind of throw it vertically. That just – but again – And I'm actually a bigger Gus Malzahn fan than I like to admit. He had some really good dudes running it. You know what I mean? That Auburn team that won in 2010, I don't know that I've ever seen one national championship team posted up by one player more than that team actually did. And they had, don't get me wrong, this is not a shot at Auburn. This is a compliment to Cam Newton and what he was able to do that year in terms of bringing that team back from some of the deficits they were facing, the Iron Bowl being one of them, Clemson being one of them that year. But Gus Malzahn kind of calling the plays and designing all that thing, it was just different back then, man. I remember playing Gus Malzahn when I was in college, and he was at Arkansas, and he had Mitch Mustain was his high school quarterback.
I was about to say, that's the guy who we kind of piggybacked into the college ranks.
Yeah.
Mustain just kind of disappeared
into
security.
We lost to them that year in two overtimes. I think we missed five kicks that would have won the game. Five kicks.
Yeah, you look at and I had to pull it up because I couldn't remember the running back's name that played on that Auburn team. But Michael Dyer,
yeah,
he was phenomenal.
Yeah,
he had a 1,000-yard rusher. You had a two-headed monster, to your point. And you also remember you had some good players on defense as well.
Yeah, especially, that's what I said. This is not me saying anything about the other players on this team.
No, this is
me saying that Cam Newton, literally, it would be like, oh, they really need a big play right here. Stiff arm, roll out.
Yeah.
Juke somebody. Oh, I'm going to outrun you. And it was like, oh, my God.
Well, that the Alabama game was living proof of that.
Yeah.
They were down, 21-0, and Cam put the team on his back and brought him back.
You schedule in front of you? I think they opened with Clemson that year, and I think it was a comeback win against Clemson, and it was something just unbelievable.
They played Clemson in the third game of the year.
Okay.
And they won 27-24. But they did
it
have
was
to,
something
they
insane.
Had to come back in that game though. But you go, Mike, to your point, you go look at a lot. They didn't blow a lot of people out. I mean, they won some close games against Miss State, South Carolina, Clemson, Kentucky. Arkansas was like a 100-something point game.
Yes.
65-43. They beat LSU by 7. I mean, they played a lot of close games. There were a lot of clutch moments.
Speaking of Gus Malzahn, have you guys taken a peek at that line this weekend? Bo, I think you brought it up earlier.
It's weird. It's like a 7-point line.
And UCF's favor, though, right? They're favored in the game against BYU.
Yeah, and BYU's going on the road. Now, UCF has lost the last two games with like a combined 9 points or some crap like that. But that's a team
that got routed by Colorado a few weeks
ago. And I watched Florida handle them. Florida gave them everything, more than they could handle, which was weird to me. But it's at UCF. It's a 3:30 kick. It's not 7. It's 2.5. I think it's moved. I swear it was more.
It didn't go down, but I saw it at 3 yesterday.
So it's 2.5. Dude.
Yeah, the antennae going off, Rob. Just starting to, I don't know. Just, hey, we got to make our picks coming up at 8 o'clock, man. I'm just telling you, that's a weird one.
Missouri, Alabama. Missouri without their quarterback, though, that's going to be helpful for Alabama. What's the level of freak out in Tuscaloosa now? Kalen DeBoer in over his head. He's not the guy.
I don't know if anybody's there yet as far as Kalen DeBoer.
Because that fan base is so rational.
Well, there's a lot of frustration. Well, college football fans are rational. Let's just leave it there. There's a lot of frustration, I think, with Jalen Milroe. You start looking at his whole body of work, it's just a lot of peaks and valleys, man. A lot of peaks and valleys. And it hasn't bitten you. You know, it could have bit you a couple times last year. It did bite you against Tennessee last week. And so that's the frustration right now. But I don't know that anybody's in fire killing DeBoer mode. Maybe a couple, but I don't think most people are there yet.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Well, no Chris Godwin for the Buccaneers on Sunday, no Mike Evans, but the Falcons will have to deal with Rashad White, Bucky Irving, and Sean Tucker. That doesn't sound sexy, but wait till you look at the numbers. It's coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio, 99 The Game. 7:02 on a Friday. Welcome to the morning shift on this Falcons Friday, Fair Foul Friday.
Freaky.
Freaky, Fair Foul Friday. Squid hates that. It makes him cringe. Atlanta United in Miami tonight. Game one of the World Series tonight.
Don't worry, I hate everything.
Hate everything. Georgia Tech getting ready for Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. Noon tomorrow, Georgia off for the weekend. But Falcons, Buccaneers, Sunday. Of course, these teams just got together a couple of weeks ago. The Falcons winning that one, 36-30 in overtime. No Chris Godwin for the Buccaneers. No Mike Evans. But Falcons will have to deal with the likes of Rashad White, Bucky Irving, Sean Tucker. Now, they've combined to help the Buccaneers rush for an average of 168 yards per game since week four. So they've discovered their rushing attack. But, man, they got gashed by the Ravens the other night. 508 yards. Baker Mayfield, what, three interceptions?
Two. He had three in the Saints game. He's had five in his last two.
That's a good point, gentlemen.
Rob Holland, ATL, hit me up and said he thinks this game is basically the Sodas last year. But just not as it's, you know, they're injured and we need to win.
What, Josh Dobbs is playing?
Look, I think his point is I want to see if this team's advanced mentally. It's hard for me to, first off, just on that part, it's hard for me
to agree with them.
Huh?
Tend to agree with them.
Well, it's hard for me to judge this team as the same as last year's because you got different parts, you got different people in here, some of the same leaders on one side, but a completely different leader on the other side in Kirk Cousins. The offense last year couldn't capitalize with turnovers. Could they do it? Can they do it this year in a situation? But I also think it's completely different, though, when you think about, yes, they lost Godwin and they lost Mike Evans, but they still have the three-headed monster Rob just talked about, rushing for, 160 yards the last couple of games on average or something like that, 130 on the season. And then they still have the guy at the helm, which is Baker Mayfield. Now, the thing that I want to know, the question you asked your question earlier, here's my question. Does Baker Mayfield, who's been he's seemingly been pressing of late because he's throwing interceptions more, is he going to press when he does drop back? Is he going to force balls in there? And if he forces them in there, can you bat one up or tip one up or step in front?
Yeah, I don't have a high amount of confidence. And look, Falcons 30 best rate when defending passing plays right now in the NFL. And that's what I think to your buddy's Peter that hits you up. I think you are – it's a lot different, but you're plagued by some of the same questions, right? I mean – can this team mentally get over the hurdle of beating teams you're supposed to beat? The Vikings were one of them, right? When you have teams that are reeling, we've mentioned a number of times, if Arthur Smith simply and Des Ritter simply go out and beat Josh Dobbs' Vikings team, which he didn't start that game, or Will Levis' Titans team, or Kyler Murray's first start of the year last year, like we're talking about probably Arthur Smith still being here.
Yep.
And that's the hurdle that I think this team has to overcome in a lot of people's minds. Get home on the quarterback, which you couldn't do, and you still can't do, against a lot of those guys. So
don't get penalized on third down when you seemingly get a stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and find consistency offensively. We have improved offensively because we can throw the ball down the field with decent consistency, but we also aren't as mobile as we were at quarterback, and that makes things tougher a little bit as well. So there are a lot of questions. I actually kind of like bringing up the Minnesota game. It's like kind of a – last week was a prove-it game. It's like beat the teams you're supposed to that are bad. Now the teams that are reeling, that are, you know, maybe middle of the pack right now, that beat those teams too.
I think that I don't think the Seattle's necessarily a bad team. I think Seattle was a team you should have beat.
I mean, they did start off 3-0.
I meant Carolina 2 weeks ago. They beat the best.
But
meaning like last, yeah.
To your point about the Tennessee game, you brought the Tennessee game last year. This reminds me. Last week reminded me of the Tennessee game, a game that you could win. And you came out and you just didn't look like any. You didn't look like you were flat, is what they. And that's the way the Tennessee game looked.
Yeah.
This is a team, though. Remember one thing, though. To me, Tampa is a team that I think has got their backs to the wall in this game. I think they're at home. They just got beat pretty handily. They lost two of their best players. Their backs on the wall, and they say, "Hey, we might have a bye coming up, but we also have Kansas City and San Francisco, and we don't want to go 4-4 into right. into Kansas City and have to play them on the road and then play San Francisco after that, that's a bad spot for us to be in.
God, so many injuries out in San Francisco. Do they even have enough guys to dress out? That's what it seems like out there.
They somehow got Ricky Pearsall back last week, so that's a person in the right direction at least, getting him back off the PUP list. But yeah, I mean, there's something's got to give over there with them because it feels like the dam's about to break in a couple of ways.
Kirk Cousins did not look very good last week, seemingly inaccurate. Well, David Archer caught up with him, an interview brought to you by Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy one-hour drive from Atlanta. And Kirk and David Archer, they're about six margaritas in when they conducted this interview.
Is the Falcons Quarterback Report. The Falcons Quarterback Report is brought to you by Rooms to Go. Buy the piece, save a little. Buy the room, save a lot. Here's Dave Archer.
Kirk, the focus of the football team after a win and a loss can sometimes be different. This seems to be a really mature team. How did you like the way the focus kind of set up this week?
Yeah, I see guys, you know, getting right back to work and viewing it as a new week, fresh week. That's how you have to be in this league, win or loss. You say, all right, new week, fresh start, we begin again, and let's go. And, you know, that's your only chance to really be able to put a tough loss behind you and get back on the right track.
I know it's not a danger for you because you've been around this league a long time and you've thrown for a lot of yards in a lot of games. You got some young guys that maybe realized some of their highs as a professional in this game last time you played Tampa. Any danger of them putting on the tape and saying, hey, this is going to be a walk in the park, we go take care of it again?
No, I think if anything, it's a little bit of you know, what will Tampa do now? You know, having played that game, how do they choose to change? And then what you find in the NFL is at the end of the day, people are going to be who they've been. They're not going to completely reinvent the wheel. So also, what are we doing? You know, what are they doing that's the same? And we'll just have to see as the game goes. But expect some wrinkles, expect some curveballs. And we all know that every game is its own entity, and you really start from scratch and have to put together another strong performance to have a chance to win.
Sometimes you go into game, I would assume, go into a game, especially a quarterback has seen as much as you have, that you kind of get an idea it's going to be a track meet a little bit. And the last one was a bit of a track meet with you and Baker exchanging plays offensively. With some of the things that happened to them Monday night, does that change any of your mindset? Is that how you attack this game on their defense?
Well, you know, I think they are a really good offense. We're going to have to keep our foot on the gas pedal, and we'll get a feel as the game goes on. And, you know, I learned last week against Seattle that, you know, even if we gave up a score before the half or we give up a score early in the third quarter, we're still in it. You know, you don't have to go force anything. That's when the game gets away from you, is when you start trying to force something to happen. So you be patient. You let the game come to you. And usually when you do that in pro football, you're there at the end.
They've got two smallish safeties in Jordan Whitehead, and now Antonio Winfield's back on the field. You mentioned there's going to be a couple of different guys on the field. Smallish guys, but kind of pesky, bulldogish type guys. Totally. What do you do with those two guys?
Yeah, they're the real deal. Winfield's as good as any safety in the league. He's a total package when it comes to making plays in the pass game, making plays in the run game, being a good blitzer, a finisher, a tackler, just being smart, tough. You know, he's a problem, and he was out last time. So that'll be a big challenge for us. Can't see the three technique was out as well last time. He's a great player, first-round pick. So they know that, and they're going to come loaded for bear.
All right, last thing for you. How do you neutralize the human solar system that is Vita Vea?
Yeah, you know, he's a problem. He's someone that you know going into the game. You know, we got to have a plan for him. We got to know where he is. We got to understand he can wreck the run game. He can be a factor in the pass game. And so, you know, there's an awareness when the O-line coach puts together the plan together of, you know, how do we handle him? Because, you know, he's been doing it for years now, and it's one thing to let him do it if he sneaks up on you, but when you know what he's capable of, you got to try to game plan for him.
It's hard to win in this league. It's doubly hard to win on the road, yet sometimes there's a value in traveling, going, getting away from home. You guys won last time you went to Carolina. You got a loss. You're coming off a loss. Now you go to Tampa. Is there any value to that?
Well, there's certainly challenges going on the road with the noise and just being in a foreign environment. You don't have as much support around you, but to your point, it can galvanize your group, and you realize, hey, it's just the 53 of us and our coaching staff, and you'd like to think it sharpens your focus and forces you to bring your absolute best to the table.
Go have some fun.
All right, thanks, Art.
Yes, let's have some fun on Sunday, gentlemen. That's Kirk Cousins with Dave Archer. Let's have some fun.
I love it. All right, thanks, Arch.
So how do you deal with that 400-pound refrigerator right there in the middle?
Got it. You got to do something to get him off balance.
Can you unplug it?
Yeah, right. You got to do something to get him off balance, right? And I used this analogy last time. It didn't end up panning out like this. A lot of times, guys like that, they move like a locomotive. It's a train. They stay on the train tracks, right? Trains are not change direction, right? You can't turn a train around and run it back the other direction very quickly.
You can derail it though,
right? And it's like a cruise ship. So a lot of times that's how you have to attack guys like that. And the point, Vita Vea is a little bit different though, man. He can move laterally a little bit better than most guys at his weight. So that is it. You, instead of just saying, hey, we're going to run away from you though, like they did last time, of saying, hey, Neusel can handle him, we'll just get out wide, we'll see if he can skate down the line. He did. Right. So I think now you have to add some kind of system or, you know, I don't want to say blindside, but like I brought up the wham play earlier. Something like that to kind of get him off balance, because I think with Ryan Neusel dinged up, obviously you don't have Drew Dolman and everything else going on in the interior of that line, I think you have to be very careful with how you approach it and not just say, well, just go get it done, because that's not going to be a winning formula, in my opinion, on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, Vita Vea is he's gotten progressively better over his career and against us progressively better. I don't know what you do. I leave that to Mike. I would just say I would put Lindstrom and Neusel on him as much as I could and see if he could beat him with a double team, because he is just, and Lindstrom struggled with him at times too when he's had one-on-one opportunities.
I just think that if I was going in with the same game plan and I was Neusel, I'd throw an early cut block. I'd throw an early cut block on him, because you usually don't cut at the center position on wide zone. But I'd if you're in a zero nose, I'd say, all right, buddy, like, hey, better be ready to watch these ankles right now. All right, because
give him something to think about.
Just give him something to think about. If I was being forced to run with the same game plan, I do not think that Zach Robinson and Dwayne Ledford will do that this weekend, though.
Gentlemen, when I was growing up, the most glamorous position in the NFL was running back. Is there a renaissance? NFL running backs. Getting into that next on In the Huddle. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. This hour brought to you by Zero Res, a smart, lasting, clean. Game one of the World Series tonight. Dodgers, Yankees, chorus of yawns. Glamorous, iconic, but not down here. But not down here, gentlemen.
Over under 1.5 World Series games that each of you will watch. What are we going with?
It's going to go under.
Yeah.
If there's a game 7, I'll be. But if I'm flipping channels, I'm around a TV and it's late in the ball game and it's close. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think 1.5 is the right number.
Yeah, that's a good number. That's a good song. That's a good number.
What do you think, Bo? Over under 1.5 World Series games you'll watch?
You go into
Cancun, getting a margarita. It's on the tube. Watch a couple.
I mean,
at-bats.
It's probably over, because there are a lot of times if the Hawks aren't on and it's the middle of the week, I'll have the game on the second TV just to know what's going on and keep up and kind of have a pulse of the series. So I would say over. I mean, I that's just kind of my. I've always done that. I don't know why. I'm gonna watch a regular season Mavericks Lakers game or game 3 of the World Series on the side TV. It's the World Series there all day long.
Is Bronny playing tonight? Is he playing this
morning?
Don't
get me started on that. Apparently,
playing at lunch.
You know, that's a historical, magical moment that you just don't understand.
I said this to my buddy yesterday when I was talking to him. He was like, what'd you think of the Bronny thing? I said, it feels like the Astros won the World Series. Like, it happened, and
this
it's going to
so
go in the record books.
Manufactured and forced yeah. and ridiculous.
It's going to go in the record
self-serving
books.
Self-serving.
There's evidence that
annoying.
It was there, but it feels a little bit cheap.
Can we talk about it for 30 seconds?
Because I challenge you to do that.
Because
go.
My biggest problem with it is that everyone is telling me why – They're making this. Oh, it's such an achievement, and I go, why? Well, look, LeBron, he stayed around. I said, let me say something. Everything LeBron does from this point in his career is an achievement, because he is defying logic with aging and that type of thing. But other than that,
and performance
there
and
is,
answers,
there is no real achievement from the other side. Well, but Bronny made it to the NBA. He was a guy that averaged 2.5 points. He made it through a medical. Incident, and I'm glad
and
that he's healthy.
Him.
And
God
I'm glad I'm so
it.
Glad he's healthy and yeah. he's over. But other than that, he didn't earn it.
No.
He's a guy that is, I think, could have been a good college player, if not the medical issue. He jumped to the NBA because he could, because his dad told his team to pick him. He went in the second round. That's fine. No problem. I think it should have, if it happened, it probably should have happened in April, because or March, I should say, because he should have worked his way through the G League like every other second round guy.
He'd be the third best player at George Mason.
And I think that's the part. But when I hear Brian Windhorst go on ESPN, I told you I could talk 30 seconds about it. ESPN and talk about
how. No, I was challenging you to not talk over 30
how
seconds.
They needed to do this to energize LeBron James. I get a little bit sick.
Oh.
Because I don't know why you need to energize a Hall of Fame player making almost $50 million a year to play basketball.
Well, Windhorst owes his career to LeBron, so anything LeBron does is okay by him.
Fair.
And to be clear, I don't blame anybody, but don't ask me to celebrate.
Yeah.
Like, I don't blame anybody.
That is perfectly said.
Don't ask me to
celebrate. That is perfect. I don't blame LeBron. I don't care about the nepotism part. Nepotism is something that happens in every industry and every walk of life, okay? I mean, we've got countries founded on nepotism. Look at England. But the reality of the situation is
it's... And inbreeding, too.
Yeah, it's no amazing feat. It was manufactured, and that's okay, too. Just don't tell me why I should celebrate. I think you're right, Mike.
Real quick. Can you at least admit that it was cool to see?
No.
No?
I don't think it was at least cool.
No, Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr., that's cool.
I think it was cool to see because just from the dad aspect, I'm looking at it going, yeah, that's a cool moment for them.
And I don't blame him, though. That's the thing people go,
That's what I just said. I don't blame him.
I just don't care because it's fake. It's like watching, you know what? I don't blame Vince McMahon putting the belt on Stone Cold Steve Austin in 1998. But that doesn't mean the outcome wasn't predetermined. All right, we can hit the
All right, you know what we're doing? What am I doing right now? We do not have the discipline to go no huddle. We have to huddle up.
Why did I get hit with a random piece of paper?
Because you said 30 seconds, and we went 3 minutes and 30
seconds. Well, that's all right. You know, gentlemen, when I was growing up, we're playing Sandlot football. I'm Tony Dorsett. I'm Eric Dickerson, all these things. Glamorous position back in the day. Barry Sanders, the list goes on and on. Then, of course, the position was de-emphasized. Oh, you can't draft a running back in the first round. You're not going to spend money on aging running backs. That's changed now. Look at Saquon Barkley. Look at Derrick Henry, who might get a rushing record this year, by the way. That record, 2105, set by Eric Dickerson back in 1984. Why the emphasis now, though? And you can also see here in Atlanta, too, with Bijan and Tyler Algier.
Yeah, I think Bijan, honestly, I think Bijan has kind of resurrected that thought when you talk about the draft. I think there were some missteps. Trent Richardson, my boy, Trent Richardson being one of them. Along the way, and then Bijan's kind of resurrected that thought.
Well, Mark Ingram for a long time, then he finally settled into a pretty distinguished
career,
right? Well,
what I'm saying is, so Mark was drafted at the back end of the first round.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, you talk about, like, top 10 running backs, it's like, oh, they don't hold enough value for that. Mark was, like, I don't know, 23rd, 24th, I feel like.
So. Well, when you talk about these guys, a lot of things are happening. For one, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Bijan Robinson, they are three-down running backs who can do everything. They can catch the ball in the backfield. They can pass protect. They can and they can run the ball up, in between the tackles and outside of them.
Is it the pass catching nowadays? Because the old school guys just toted it. They didn't really catch the ball in the backfield very often.
Here's how I feel about it. Because this has been covered a number of times, and defenses are adjusting to what offenses have become. Right? It's the cyclical nature of the NFL.
Right.
So now we are just simply adjusting back to where that running back that can run between the tackles is becoming more valuable because linebackers and D linemen are getting lighter because they have to cover space. It's just like somebody's like, man, Carolina should run the triple option. I mean, that's where they're at. And I'm like, it's not a bad idea. Nobody's doing it. Might as well hit people in the mouth when you get a chance.
Bryce Young would get killed.
I was about to say.
You
have to be involved after every game.
Go hire the Army coach.
Yeah.
Right? Draft their quarterback, and there you go.
But it is an interesting point. But also, look at both backs last week, that we played, Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker. Those are both two dual threat guys out of the backfield and catching the ball and running. But also, it's two-headed monsters everywhere, too. So these guys are going.
Or three in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and these guys are going places, and they got a little bit more aware on the tread.
The Thunder Lightning.
Yeah.
I'm here for it, man.
I am, too. That's why you got to have two, a Tyler Algier and Bijan.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, bell cow backs are still few and far between. The Saquons and Derrick Henrys, are still fewer and farther between than the Charbonnet and Walker groups or the Bijan and Algier kind of groups. I think that's what gives you sustained success over the year. That's why when people bring up Derrick Henry's rushing record this year, possibility, I'm like, dude, a lot of things got to go right. He's got to stay away from like just tweaking a knee or, you know, something other than that. And also everybody else around him needs to stay healthy if that's going to happen as well. The offensive line, the wide receivers, everybody.
Look at Christian McCaffrey last year. They used him as your bell cow. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many touches a game did he get? And he's nowhere to be found this year because of injury. And now I know he's got his head injury, but if you just overload one guy, their bodies are not holding up because of the dual threats, how much they're actually being asked to do.
Yeah. It's interesting, man, and it will just continue to evolve to me. But I'll have my eyes peeled on Derrick Henry. There ain't no doubt about it.
You know, and if you're an old-school football fan, there's nothing sexier when a team can just run a ball down a team's throat. Yeah, it's modern sexy to throw the ball for 400 yards, but when you just see a running back just inflict his will on a defense and they just dominate, it's beautiful.
Derrick Henry, to me, has mastered the art of running through tacklers' wrists. And what I mean by that is he's not going to completely shake you out of your shoes, but he's going to force you into making an arm tackle. And when you do that,
good luck with that.
Yeah, when you do that, when his shin hits your wrist, you ain't bringing him down, bro. Like, it ain't happening.
Or that stiff arm hits you right in the
thorax. He's mastered the art of that very slight change of direction that causes you to change direction, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope, not bringing him down.
Mike, what day is it?
Let's go. Are you ready for this? All right, how about this one? Let me see where I want to go. Fair or foul, Rob gets excited about sweater season. Fair or foul, Kyle Pitts and Kyle Trask have probably done a jersey swap at some point. Fair or foul, someone other than Bijan or Tyler Algier will register a rushing attempt this weekend for the Atlanta Falcons. Stick with us. It's Fair or Foul Friday. I'm mic'd up. Sports Radio 99 The Game. You already know what day it is. It's Fair Foul Friday. It's a freaky Falcons Fair Foul Friday here on mic'd up, the morning shift. Robbie T. A
lot of effing alliteration there.
Yeah, a lot of effing around. Squid Billy, Bo Morgan, Mike Johnson here with you on this Friday morning. Appreciate you hanging out with us. You guys know the drill. If you've never heard Fair Foul Friday, which I don't know how that's possible at this point, then basically I make the statement, Bo and Rob tell me whether or not it's fair foul.
They're even playing in the halls of Parliament.
That's what I've heard. Somebody told me that.
No, they
told me
that. And they don't get that much free speech.
The Prime Minister goes, wham, wham, wham!
Do you like that, Rob?
I love that. Very true, actually, unfortunately.
How about this one? We're going to start with one that can be proven fair or foul, all right? And we're going to figure it out by the end of this segment. Kyle Pitts and Kyle Trask have done a jersey swap, fair or foul. I don't know. But somewhere along the lines, Kyle Trask being the backup quarterback in Tampa Bay, we'll figure it out by then. Bo, you think it's been done for? Have you seen a picture of this?
I am pretty positive I have seen this. So where I stand most of the times where we do our interviews,
yeah.
I've been able to see guys leave and come in with jerseys, like autographed after the game and stuff. So I am very positive that it has happened. So I'm going fair.
All right. What do you think, Rob? Think it's happened before?
Absolutely, it's happened
before. Those guys were magical, Bo, back in college.
I have a Kyle Trask jersey. Everybody has a Kyle Trask jersey.
Don't you roll your eyes.
Just a couple Kyles getting it done, man. Just a couple Kyles getting it done.
Don't you soil the good
Dylan,
Kyle
if you could figure that out
name.
Before the end of the segment, whether or not that's fair or foul, that would be great. All right, how about this one? Fair or foul? There is a better chance of Vandy beating Texas this weekend than of Oklahoma beating Ole Miss. When you look at the Vandy lines, it's tighter. It's tighter for Vandy over Texas than it is for Oklahoma Ole Miss. Fair or foul, better chance of Vandy in Nashville knocking off Texas than Oklahoma beating Ole Miss. Isn't that crazy to say? Shout out to the Oklahoma
fans. I'm
going to
say foul just because college football is just so crazy.
Yeah.
Talking about a bunch of kids under 25, no pineal glands, no executive function.
What does it make you feel if you're an Oklahoma fan and the line is tighter on the Vandy-Texas game than the Oklahoma-Ole Miss game? Bo, what do you think? Fair or foul, better chance of Vandy beating Texas than Oklahoma over Ole Miss?
I think it's, first off, they have done it. I've got a picture.
I was going to wait till the end. Thank you for doing that, though. Dylan already told me about 2 minutes
ago. Sorry, my bad. I think it's fair because you know what Vanderbilt has that Oklahoma does not?
What's that?
A starting quarterback that they trust and know how to use.
Yep.
And therefore, I think you're onto something. I think it's fair.
All right, how about this one? Two sacks for the Falcons against Baker Mayfield. Two sacks. Two sacks. Get right. Two sacks.
I think it's fair, and here's why.
Okay,
the Falcons have been putting an emphasis. They get Troy Anderson back. I think they could use Caden Ellis in some pass rush situations, which I think he's suited for because of the integrity he keeps in his pass lanes. Also, I think Baker might have to, if you play like I pray that they do and come play up a little bit tighter, they might make Baker pat that ball a little bit longer, which gives you time to get there.
Rob, don't let him talk you into it. What do you think? Fair foul.
I'm an optimist.
Okay.
I haven't seen this. They'll have to be out of character to perpetrate such a thing. I'm going to say fair.
Okay. All right.
They'll have 2.5 sacks.
I'm picking up what you're putting down right now. How about this one? Running backs and tight ends for the Bucs will have more receiving yards than wide receivers for the Bucs. Running backs and tight ends combined for the Buccaneers will have more receiving yards than the actual receivers will for the Buccaneers this weekend. Fair foul. Rob, we will start with you.
I'm going to go ahead and say fair. No Chris Godwin, no Mike Evans. They're going to have to figure out other ways to distribute the ball, and they have other personnel that can do so. Not as sexy as a Godwin or an Evans, but I'm going to say fair.
Yeah, Cade Otton goes for 100 last week, but I also wonder, Bo, if Cade Otton will be bigger in the eyes of Atlanta's defense, maybe try to clamp him down a little more, knowing what you have at the receiver position.
Right.
The running backs and the tight end combined for, like, I think 250 yards of the 370. Maybe it was 230 of the 370 that Baker threw for, so I think it's fair.
Okay.
Baker passes for under 200, though.
I think when you look at last week and you look at the injuries, you probably say fair, but I also think, like, to my point, I think Cade Otton probably gets more eyes from the defense knowing what's at the receiver position this weekend, so I think that's going to be interesting to go.
Yeah, you know, that's not a bad call. He did catch he did have 3 for 44 last time we played, so they did a good job of limiting him then.
He wasn't non-existent last time. All right, how about this one? Someone other than Bijan or Tyler Algier registers a rush attempt for the Atlanta Falcons. Kirk Cousins famously not going to register a rushing attempt, but I don't know who it'll come from.
I still think there's a naked bootleg in there that's going to shock the world.
You think
they're
so?
Just saving it for
maybe
week
just a
16.
Big first down. Yeah, right? Yeah. I think this comes down to, will you have to see somebody like a Darnell Mooney on an end around, or Ray McLeod with a backwards pass, something along those lines? What do you think, Bo?
Well, you said Bijan or Tyler, correct?
Someone other than Bijan or Tyler gets a rushing attempt.
Jace McClellan got 5 last week.
Yeah, you think?
I hope that happens, yeah, because we're up.
I was gonna say,
but wait, he's got to be active. You know, I think it's fair because I think we've seen Darnell Mooney get some carries. We've seen, I think Drake got a carry one point.
Yeah, I think
so,
he did too.
So they've Zach is kind of mixed it in here and there with a little bit of a sneakiness. So I think it's fair. Yeah.
A little bit of a changeup. I say it's fair.
Okay. All right. How about this one? Bo, we'll start with you. Rob gets extremely excited about sweater season. It's like when there's a chill in the air in the morning, Rob's like, it's go time. This is my Super Bowl.
It's fair. I think it was 62 degrees out one morning, and he had some kind of sweater pullover on.
He's got a 2-bedroom apartment in the guest bedroom closet, just sweaters.
It's like
Bruce Wayne's Batman closet.
Dude, he's so happy for Professor Rob to break out.
It is, dude. It's a good look, man. It's a vibe.
It really is.
It's not even a fashion statement. It's a vibe.
It is a good look for you, I have to say.
How about this
deep
one?
Deep bench. It's definitely fair. Deep bench, loaded
well
with 5-star recruits in that sweater closet.
Why you do well with the Cougars.
Before the season started, Kirk Cousins' over-under for touchdown passes was 27.5. Preseason, 27.5. Right now, he's got 10. Kirk Cousins will hit the over. He will hit the season over. He's got to throw 18 more touchdown passes. Kirk Cousins will hit the season over this year. Fair or foul? Bo, we'll start with you.
Fair. He's in the over. He's going to hit 3 Sunday.
Oh, come on. You feel it. You said that with so much confidence, and I love it. I love it.
Well, he's going to shatter 32.
You think 32?
He's going to have 32 touchdown passes.
What an obscure number. What an
17 interceptions.
What's the Falcons single-season record? It's 37, right?
I thought it was in the 40s. You might be right, though.
I think it's 37.
I thought Matt did 40 1 year.
Dylan, you can look that up, and I promise I won't ruin it.
There you go. Now we're talking. How about this one? Antoine Winfield will be more disruptive than Vita Vea on Sunday. Antoine Winfield will actually come to be more disruptive, even though it was Vita the first time around, obviously. Winfield.
Question.
What?
Can you define disruptive?
Game wrecker, like a TJ Watt?
He will be in the picture more when there are tackles made. How about that one?
Foul.
He's in the picture. He's in the camera lens.
Oh,
and there's tackles being made.
Oh, that's fair because I think Antoine Winfield is going to make a lot of downfield tackles because we're going to eat Sunday.
All right, I like that.
Foul. Avante Davis, give me the name.
Woo! Come on.
Let me tell you something.
Tell us about it.
First off, I have so much respect for that guy, and I cannot wait till he retires because he haunts us.
10 seconds on these next three. Jalen Johnson is more important to the Hawks' success this year than Trae Young. Jalen Johnson more important to the Hawks' success than Trae Young. Bo, we'll start with you.
That's foul. Trae Young is your leader. He's supposed to be the heartbeat of the team.
Playing defense too, though. It doesn't matter.
Trae Young is supposed to be the stir.
Just Trae. All right, how about this one? Kirk throws for 250 in order for the Falcons to win. Kirk has to throw for 250 in order for the Falcons to win this weekend.
I think that's foul. Okay. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think you can run the ball on them. You just got to prove it.
All right, Rob, what do you think?
I think it's foul.
All right. Vikings, even though they lose last night, still one of the three best teams in the NFL.
Fair. Fair until you prove me wrong.
I love it.
Very complete team, in spite of the defense last night.
Not quite anymore. Bo, what do you think?
It's foul.
There you have it. Fair Foul Friday was a success. Thank you guys for playing.
You're a fraud!
Fraudulent freaky Fair Foul Friday.
All right, this hour has been brought to you by Zero Res, a smart, lasting clean like all of my sweaters. All right. You didn't ask for it, but you're going to get it anyway. You're getting our picks top of the hour.
It's the prequel to Man Up.
And I'm hurting, man. I am hurting. I'm going to have to do a complete rehaul of the front office after all my picks. Fire everybody. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 again. Hey, what you doing on Friday, December 20th at 8 p.m.? Well, if you're the 10th caller at 404-726-0929, you get to go to see Winterfest. Who's going to be at Winterfest? You got Escape, BBD, Q Parker and friends. Oh, man, who else? Jace For Real, Soul For Real, Silk Plus, many, many more. 10th caller, 404-726-0929. You get to go to Winterfest. All right, we have the it's like international law that we have to do picks, even though nobody really cares. Nobody wants to hear them.
I got to stick them in there.
We
got to put our neck on the line out there and make sure that people know where we stand, Rob.
Oh, I don't think I'm doing too well. I think I'm going to have to I'm going to have to just do a complete rebuild. I'm going to have to just tear it down and rebuild it, fire the GM, the head coach, get rid of the quarterback, get a new closer. I need three new starters.
I will tell you, if you're out there and you're listening and you're riding around and you want to make your picks as well, I'm about to put it out on the Morning Shift show account, our locks of the week, our NFL games of the week, Cowboys against 49ers, 49ers minus 4.5, LSU against Texas A&M, Texas A&M favored by 1 in that. So if you want to make those picks, head over to our show account at 929 Morning Shift. You can follow along with us. If you ain't scared to come back on Man Up Monday.
Don't die, coward.
If you are scared, then you know what I mean. Just say, stay out of this thing. You don't want it.
All right, gentlemen. Let's talk about that Cowboys 49ers thing. Cowboys, Jerry Jones had a terrible birthday. He's been grouchy, wanting to get radio hosts fired because they ask him uncomfortable questions. 49ers, everybody's hurt. I even think Kyle Shanahan's injured too, so he's questionable for Sunday.
I don't know, Bo. What do you want to go first?
Not really, because I have no clue. But I'm going to tell you this. I trust Kyle Shanahan a lot more in a regular season game in October than I do Zimmer. And that's who he's going against. That's the matchup.
Yeah.
So I don't care if he's got guys banged up. The Cowboys are a mess. The head coach is being called out by the owner for the bad play calls, and the head coach is taking it in stride, doing his – tell you something. Whatever happens at the end of this thing – I don't want to hear bad words about Mike McCarthy because he is handling everything he's being put through. Now, some of it is his own account or on the court, I should say, but he's handling it with class. Give me the Niners to cover.
Yeah.
4.5.
I like the Niners to win the football game, but I'm going to zig when you zag right here. I actually like the Cowboys to cover the 4.5. I think the Niners win. I think they win by a field goal, but I still think there's some pride in the line for the Cowboys. I agree with you. Things are an absolute mess in Dallas, dude. Like, nothing's going right. But the team's simply too talented to carry on like that. Brock Purdy has played okay, not great, not even really good. He's played okay. I think somebody in the secondary steps up, makes a big pick, and I think that Dallas keeps it tight. So Dallas plus the 4.5 for me.
Yeah, I think San Francisco will not cover. They'll get a late safety to win by two.
I hope that happens so bad. Man, up Monday would be electric. It'd be electric if we could come
have
in here
to call
and show
in
that.
If that happened. Yeah,
can you imagine?
All right, gentlemen, let's go to that big college game out there at Kyle Field. Texas A&M, a 1-point home favorite over LSU. First place in the SEC on the line. Both teams are unbeaten in conference play. They do have losses out of conference. Who you got?
Well, I think LSU has the better quarterback. That said, though, Wegman, you said he's kind of up and down, night or day. He's coming off a bad game. Before that, he had a great game against Missouri. They're really talented up front on the defensive side. A&M can get after you. Look, LSU knows what it's like to play in tough places, but that's still a tough place to play. I don't know, man. I feel weird, but I'm going A&M.
Yeah.
It's a 1-point game, so it's odd. I mean, it could be a push, but I'm going A&M.
Yeah, I hate to fall in line with you on that. I'm going A&M as well. And LSU fans, don't tweet us and say, you never gave us a chance. It just is what it is, man. I think Texas A&M is built better.
Just against the world, man.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M is built grittier. And I think LSU is going to come up. They're going to load the box. They're going to force Connor Wegman to do some things through the air. But even when they've done that, when LSU's done that, it hasn't really worked out for them all the time. And I think that there's a lot of positive things going on with LSU. I just don't think they are built for games like this against gritty, blue-collar, A-gap teams like Texas A&M. Texas A&M has had their hiccups. Don't get me wrong. But I just think when it comes down to it, Connor Wegman makes somebody miss, maybe even in the running game, and A&M is able to squeak this one out. But I do think it's going to be a barn burner, man. And I think that atmosphere just might be the edge for me, right?
I think it's going to be the edge. You've got the 12th man at Texas A&M. They're going to have all day to get lathered up under the lights at Kyle Field. I think Texas A&M not only covers, but they win it by 27-23.
Garrett with the nice nugget. Home teams won this game every year since 2017. So there you go. That's a home field advantage. Jesse group right there.
All right, speaking of, you talked about that, my college pick, Georgia Tech going up to Blacksburg. It's the visiting team that's done so well in that series. Visiting team has won 8 of the last 9.
Wow.
Georgia Tech has won 4 in a row at Lane Stadium. They seem to do just fine up there.
Wow.
In spite of inner Sandman. Georgia Tech a 10.5-point underdog. I just think if they just clean up special teams, man, that would mean a lot for Georgia Tech. I think they cover, and I think they might even get the upset.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that. That'd be awesome. So going to stick to college then. This one used to be the best matchup in October, it felt like, in every year. Every year it was 1 versus 2, Mike. 1 mm-hmm. versus 3. Mm-hmm. 3 versus 2. 4 versus 5. It doesn't matter the numbers. Miami and Florida State. Oh. FSU is coming down to the Hard Rock. The over is 54.5. I'm going to tell you something. One thing Miami does is score points. You know what else they do? They let the other guys
score points.
The last 5 results, 62-0, 50-15, 38-34, 39-38, and 52-45. That's Miami's last 5. You know what Florida State can't do? They can't score. But Miami's going to score for them. Get the over in 54.5.
They're going to score for them.
I think Miami drops a 50-burger on Florida State this week.
Wow.
But it might be like 51-38. Who knows? I doubt it. I think they do score 50, though, on Florida State. They're awful.
Look, man, there's actually multiple games that I thought about picking. First of all, I think the UCF-BYU line is extremely interesting.
It's asking you to bet on it.
I know, but it's extremely interesting. I think when you look at a team that's 3-4 and favored over an undefeated squad, it's like, yeah, that line should look a little funky. Here's what I'm going to go, though. All right, and for the record, I also really like the Bama line against Missouri. That one's funky as well. It's kind of the same situation. 5-2 Bama, who hasn't played well at all. They're going to face off with 6-1 Missouri, who's ranked 21st, and somehow they're 17-point favorites at home.
Yeah, don't.
I'm not going to bet with my heart on that one.
You
though.
Should,
I'm
though.
Lay out. I'm
Can I tell
out.
You something? You yeah. should, because that's a
that's a weird one.
That 6-1 is a little bit of a mirage.
All right, well, here's the thing. I'm actually going to go in the same direction, but let me go to what is the new Big Ten right now. How about number 1 Oregon at home?
I look
they're
at this.
Facing 6-1 Illinois. They're like 7-0 versus 6-1. What a slugfest. This is going to be a tight one. Oregon favored by 21.
I wanted
Oregon favored by 21.
You're doing what I wanted to do.
All right,
Illinois wearing those throwback leather helmets. That was so cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Give me Oregon against the Fighting Illini. I'll take Oregon. I think actually it's listed right now at 21.5. I still like it. I think Oregon. I think it's a boat race. I think it's a boat race on Illinois.
Dylan Gabriel's playing pretty good right now too.
Yeah, I think that's a very good football team. Number one won't catch them off guard. I think Oregon deals with business, Rob. I think they deal with business.
All right, the 5-2 Commanders hosting the 4-2 Bears. Jaden Daniels has a rib issue. He might be a little hobbled. Bears coming off a bye. What is your phrase there?
Rest deficit.
This game has been impacting the election too. When Washington loses
right.
at home.
Before the election.
Yeah, the incumbent doesn't win, and the incumbent party is it's based on.
Yeah.
All right, Bears a 2.5-point favorite. I think they cover. Caleb Williams slowly but surely getting better and better and better. The rest deficit thing, I like the Bears in this one.
Yeah. That's an issue one because if it is Marcus Mariota, he played decently well, but we all know Marcus Mariota at his core. So it'd be interesting to kind of keep tabs on that.
You like taking shots at him.
No, man, I don't like how things ended here. I'm always going to defend the team against some things that I don't like, and I don't like the fact that Marcus Mariota left midseason, dude. Well, I just don't like it.
I understand it. All right, we got to go quick. I know, according to Dylan in my ear, Houston and the Colts. Colts come into H-Town. Look, Texans can score points. It's a 45.5 over. Take the over.
Wow. All right, look, man, I think that when I look at this entire situation, you talk about rest deficit. The Saints this weekend, and I hate to do this, the Saints are 7.5-point underdogs against the Chargers. Actually, I think it's kind of gone down to 7, so I'll stick with the 7. You talk about rest deficit, all right, and you got to look at this one, I think, Rob. The Saints, coming off the Thursday night, they get a little mini bye week. It looks like Cesar Ruiz, Chris Olave, a number of their other players will be able to at least surround Spencer Rattler and give him a little bit of something this week. I think the Saints, with the mini bye, a little bit healthier, plus the 7 points, I think that's a much tighter game. I like the Saints this weekend for my NFL lock.
Carr's officially listed as questionable as well. Yeah, I don't know if he'll play, but
Everybody, it seems like, involved in that situation is starting to get on the mend right now for New Orleans. So I think that's a good look this weekend.
All right, Melvin from Morrow won the tickets to Winterfest. Coming up next, we have Dave from Soda Springs. We're going to talk to him. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple N for Tiffany. Falcons getting ready for a date down in Tampa against the decimated Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We're taking your calls at 404-726-0929. Let's go out to Dave in Soda Springs. Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, they can't even hear you in Soda Springs, man. I think there's one radio signal and it's coming out of Pocatello, Idaho.
They don't have the Odyssey app there?
They have the Odyssey app.
No, they don't have anything there, man. I mean, we just got the movie Jaws just made it to the theater there that holds about 14 people.
Oh, and the crying game. It's a dude. Oh, spoiler alert. All right.
Yeah, that would be disturbing. That would be like a zombie movie to them, so they would know.
All right, I don't think it's going to be 36-30 this time. Is this game going to last 2 hours, 37 minutes on Sunday, Dave?
Do you think both teams are going to try to run it?
I think maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, Rob, you're on to something probably pretty good. I think they're going to try to certainly feature those three guys on the ball, and we don't even know if Bucky Irving's going to be able to go. He has not practiced the first 2 days of this week, and so we'll see if Bucky shows up on their injury report today and whether he can go. But Rashad White and Sean Tucker will certainly get opportunities. I think if we might be – I know we are. We're making a mistake if we discount what these guys can do throwing the football too. Jalen McMillan is an outstanding receiver. He's young. Sterling Shepard's a veteran receiver, much to the likes of Kadarius Hodge. We know what Hodge did to these guys last time. And Trey Palmer is a guy that's emerging, just hasn't gotten the ball thrown to him because he's playing with Evans, you know, and Godwin. So they've got guys that catch the ball, and I think their tight end's a big-time player in Cade Otton too. So they've got some things going for them on the offensive side of the ball. They get guys back defensively. Antoine Winfield coming back is a big deal for them on defense. He did not play against us last time. And Kalijah Kancey up front teamed up with Vita Vea. You know, Vita Vea, who's the hammer, and then Kalijah Kancey is kind of that poor man's Aaron Donald type guy, real quick and be able to knife through. So they get some people back on the defensive side, just lose a couple guys on the offensive side.
Yeah, well, you know, we might have somebody back, too. There's a chance. I don't know if it's going to happen. We're not sure, but Troy Anderson's been practicing a little bit this week. Arch, if he's back on the field, do you think you could see situations where he and Lamon are in the middle in there in a passing situation, and maybe you have Caden Ellis in a pass rush situation?
Yeah, I think there's no question about it. You know, as you try to, you know, kind of spur that group on that's rushing the passer, try to get some punch to it, I think that Caden certainly has the ability to slide outside. It's not something you're going to want to do all the time, but it certainly could be a changeup. We haven't shown it a ton. He slides up in that B and C gap from time to time when we show a five-man front, but it's more interiorly. We don't see him on the edge a lot. He's lined up out there a few times, but you know, as soon as the team gets a gauge on that you've got a 240-pound guy on the edge or 235-pound guy on the edge, they're going to run at him. And so you got to be careful about, you know, your steady diet of that. But certainly I think that could be a changeup, absolutely.
Arch, look into your crystal ball for me and try to look forward to Sunday and what this outcome actually looks like offensively for the Falcons, because you look at him throwing for 500 yards last time they faced the Bucs, and then Bijan the last couple of weeks has been really special in the run game. And I know what Raheem's answer would be and Zach Robinson's answer would be, well, it's all about what they try to do to us. You know, we're going to react and we're not going to go in, you know, thinking we know what's going to happen. But I'm asking Dave Archer, looking at that crystal ball, and the way you see things play out this Sunday, if you maybe have a handle on what you'd like to see that would make the Falcons successful in order to win offensively.
Well, first of all, Mike, I'd like them to just do what they're capable of doing. You know, if Drake London's running an in-cut and the ball's, you know, like 6 feet above his six inches above his head when he elevates to catch the football, he can't let it go through his hands to get it picked off by the safety that's behind him. Kirk Cousins can't think that he's Lamar Jackson and try to skate out of the pocket and try to do something he's probably not capable of doing, get the ball raked out that's scooped and scored. So just do the things you're capable of doing and take attention to detail. As far as play calling goes, I do think they'll ebb and flow as to what Tampa's going to do. Tampa was really good in the Baltimore game the first two series defensively. You go back and look at that game. They sacked Lamar twice in the first series of downs. It wasn't until later on, until Derrick Henry ripped off that 81-yard run, that, you know, Baltimore started to get some footing in the run game and started to kind of dictate in the game. And then ultimately, Lamar had a monster day throwing for five touchdowns. But their rushing numbers, I think they have 250 yards rushing, 260 yards rushing in the game, which is a monster day. But Derrick had 81 on one run, and Lamar Jackson ran for 52 yards, which you're not going to get. We're not going to get that on Sunday. So all of a sudden you add that up, and that's 130 yards rushing comes off of that total if you don't have an 81-yard run by Bijan Robinson or Tyler Algier. So I think it's going to be a little bit tougher going than people think it's going to be. And so it's going to be important that they continue to mix what's going on. You're going to get 5- and 6-man fronts like you did last time. They played Baltimore very similar to the way they played us. They blitz from everywhere. That's who Todd Bowles is. And so it's going to have to be a crafty game where you're going to pick some of the things that you did really well last time, which was throwing the football. But you've got to get the run game going, too, against these guys so they can't just tee off and rush the passer, because they are going to be better defensively from a personnel standpoint. So to be able to nail it down and say, hey, this is the identity of this game, I think that's who this team is. I think the identity is that they have the ability to morph into what they want to, but they have to be – taking things, attention to detail has to be there. Hand placement on blocks, catching the football, you know, don't try to do something you're not capable of doing, those kind of things.
Archer, back in the day when we were kids, we'd play sandlot football. We all pretended to be a running back. I'm Walter Payton. I'm Tony Dorsett. Then the running back position seemed to be de-emphasized. Now there's a renaissance with Derrick Henry, of course, up there in Baltimore, Saquon, Bijan being drafted in the first round. How do you explain the renaissance of the running back and the glamour of it?
Well, I think that, you know, what happens, Rob, is this game is an ebb and flow game. There are things that catch popularity. Remember the Chicago Bear defense to cover the three interior offensive linemen and have guys coming off the edge and all. There's still pieces of that, but you don't see it as much because offense has morphed into and changed to be able to play and run against that and throw against it because it made you vulnerable. A lot of times you're a single high safety, so it took away some of those opportunities to defend down the field. I think that's what's happening now with the run game. The run game, we've gone to such a spread look. It's changed the dynamic of the player that's on the other side of the field. You got safeties in the box. You got lighter linebackers, maybe even lighter up front from a defensive line standpoint. Not a lot of vita veas on every team. So now teams are getting back to running the football. You got two tight ends on the field. You got guys that can run the ball. And I think it's happened in college, too. College played such a spread style of offense that they've gotten back to running the football, too. A lot of people look at the Big 12 and they say, well, they throw the ball over the yard. Well, that's where there's a ton of these Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson, a lot of these guys coming from the Big 12. That's where they run the football. And as you know, you and I, that's where the guys were coming from back yesteryear. You know, those great running backs of Barry Sanders and those guys coming out of there, Billy Sims, those guys. So I think it's just an ebb and flow of the game, and there's been guys that have fit in the right spot. I mean, look at Williams last night, the youngster from Notre Dame. He ran the ball so well for the Rams last night. So you're right, there's a lot of good running backs, and it's cool to see, because you're right, unfairly, really, because they're an important part of it. It's just who's running it and who's not.
It's like parachute pants. They always come back in style.
Boy, I can't wait to see you in those. The Zubas. I can't wait to see you break out your own Zubas.
I never skip leg day.
Have those hit Soda Springs yet? Or
Oh, Zubas are still in style. And so, yeah.
That's high style.
The Jim McMahon autographed Zubas. Yeah, no
question. Oh, wow. You know, I was about to ask you about the run defense improvement over the last 2 weeks, Arch, but then that popped in my head that I know you were very complimentary of Jalen McMillan and Trey Palmer, but without Mike Evans and Chris Godwin out there, should the Falcons maybe come and hug up a little bit tighter on these receivers, which could maybe help your pass rush, because maybe Baker has to hold it a half a count or two longer, and maybe your guys can get home.
I don't know how scary it is to your co-host that something could actually pop into your head, but that's an interesting deal, an interesting thought. It's a good thought, Mo. You know,
thank you. Appreciate that, Arch.
It's something. Mm-hmm. It's something I've talked about a number of times, to where you come up and you play a little closer. You know, Baker's going to try to get the ball out of his hands, obviously, get these guys the football, get them going. Screen game's a big part of what they do. He's a veteran quarterback that does a good job of spreading the ball around. I think that there's a depth. I don't think you're going to change your personality. You're probably going to try to look at what they're going to do run game wise. I think their run game is emerging. They've done some good things running the football over the last few weeks. They even had some moments against us, had the big run against us. So that'll be number one priority. And so I think you're going to be willing to give up some of those underneath throws, even though it's probably going to get some of these young guys going. But it certainly is a mix-up that I think that they could probably use. And I think, and Mike will tell you, you know, you got to try to help the offensive line to a certain extent. And if you can get the ball out quickly, then that's helping them gain some confidence and get them going. And maybe you can deter some of that confidence by coming up and playing tighter, and that gets your pass rush going. So it makes the quarterback hold the ball a little bit longer. So it's certainly a cat-and-mouse game. But don't let anything else pop in your head. That could be dangerous.
I was going to say, Dave, he says at least six or seven things every day that are more terrifying than that. There's no doubt about it. It scares me out of my chair at least once a day. Look, and I have thoughts on this, and we got about 30 seconds, Arch, but I think you have to help Ryan Neusel against Vita Vea this week. He kind of took over the game on the ground, you know, against the Falcons last time out, kind of had his way with Ryan Neusel. Obviously, we don't have a very deep playbook as far as the offensive ground game, but just from your perspective, what do you think they can do to help a guy like Ryan Neusel in that matchup with Vita Vea and maybe get Vita off balance a little bit?
Well, I think you're right. You know, anytime you got a guy that's got his own solar system, has got three moons rotating around him, that's a big individual. And so to try to get a couple of bodies on him. But you know as well as I do, Mike, what Bowles is going to do is he's going to try to isolate guys up front. He's going to show five-man looks. They're going to drop off. They're going to come. And so he's going to get singled sometimes. And I don't think you can completely dictate that. But, yes, you'd like to get two hats on the big fella and try to get him moved off the ball a little bit. I think Kalijah Kancey's a problem, too, because his quickness up front, they're two completely different players. And talking to Coach Ledford, one is quick and can jump in and out of two different gaps, and the other guy's just a hammer that's going to push people around. So there's going to be a lot more of a challenge up front this time than we had last time against these guys.
All right, Arch, use your abundant powers for good and will this team to victory on Sunday. Let's come home. Let's come home with a win.
Arch, where are we eating Saturday?
Oh,
yeah, I haven't decided yet that you're going to be allowed to go, but I'm still thinking about it.
Spearmint Rhino is what I've heard.
All right, Arch, appreciate you, man.
See you guys. See ya.
All right, coming next in the life of Squid, when a Paul Feinbaum call goes Wrong.
Uh-oh.
Next on the Morning Shift Yikes. Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game.
And the Odyssey app.
Meow.
Mark Zeno with us. I didn't ever get there. Mark Zeno hanging out with us.
I think they got it for
me. Yeah, well, I don't know. I just want to make sure I identify correctly.
Nobody actually has to say my name.
They think it's us.
You just describe the person in the room and everybody knows who you're talking about.
I don't want him to say something like, Georgia has no chance against Texas, and then it comes back on us. I want people to know he's the one sitting in that chair over there.
Oh, you're going to start already? Hold on.
I'm just kidding.
Okay, listen, let me get the important part out of the way. So I was late to the party finding out that Bo and his wonderful wife are with child. So
yeah, with child. It's a great way to put it.
I wanted to wish him congratulations. I text him, and I text every guy who tells me that they're having a baby. Just three things, okay? Three things are great about this whole thing. The plumbing works, the swimmers swim, and hey, you finally got some. I mean, there you go. It's a 3-for-3 right there.
I got proof that
He's
it happened
on a
once.
Yeah,
He's
I mean,
on a heater. Don't ever walk away from the table on a heater, bro.
Exactly.
Three
so
going
congrats
right for
to
you.
Well, thank you. And he brought me a wonderful multifaceted gift.
There you go.
And I'm very appreciative of that. All and right. a card for the wife.
Multifaceted. What was it?
Well, you got me liquor and cigars with a gift card for her. So, covers.
Share what? Do you bring him vodka? Because he's.
I did.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
It's Tito's. That's all he drinks.
He tries to act like he drinks whiskey.
I do drink whiskey.
No,
I just,
not like
oh,
I
you're
do. A vodka man.
Here's the thing. And then we're going to get to my segment.
The southern draw and the location
is,
of your.
Oh, this is yours. So let's hijack this if it's his.
Yeah.
First off, get
used to having things hijacked for you when you're going to be a dad because nothing is yours anymore.
Every time you walk in the door, I'm used to something getting hijacked. Let me tell you something. I drink whiskey. I just only do it in certain occasions. And most of the time, it's when we're at home, it's just us, and I'm firing up the Egg or the Traeger or the Weber or the barrel smoker, and I go, you know what? I'm going to have a couple of glasses of whiskey. To Mark's point, I drink a ton of vodka the few times I drink, Mom. And that's my number
once,
one.
Once a month.
That's my number one drink. So, without further ado, Dylon, let's talk more about me.
Walk into your trap. Take over your trap.
I. What?
I deal with it every day, man. I know
every
what you're
day you got to do this.
I deal with it every day.
That's right.
I mean, hold on. It's like this. Man,
what? I'm double sponsored, baby.
Yeah, I deal with it every day.
You are the strangest person when it comes to this stuff.
What?
Let's talk about me. I'm double sponsored.
That's right. I am.
Yeah.
I got not one. I actually have more than one, but I don't want to get carried away. Don't forget Alwyn New Realm Brewing. It is phenomenal. It's a craft lager. W Sauce, Fireshire, little Bloody Mary mix. Also, Zeno, the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic, November 25th at Eagle Watch. There's still some spots available, and maybe you can get in as a sponsor as well. New Realm's going to be there. Our friends at Twin Peaks are going to be there. Our friends at Finley Roofing is going to be there. So, and more to come. Go to the 92.9 The Game website, the events page, Zeno, click on it. And you can sign up today. And maybe you can play with Mark Zeno. You never know.
All right, Mark Zeno, sponsored by Prozac and Viagra. Thanks.
Hey, man, you got to do what you do.
Blue Chew.
Now, let's get to Mark Zeno's favorite radio host, not name me.
Mm.
Paul Feinbaum.
Oh, God. I thought you were talking about somebody else.
And no. We're not doing that because then it comes back on me.
Well, that's what I was hoping for.
No, we're not doing that.
Because any way I can hijack your segment is to get it right back on you.
We're not having any beef between you and people.
Speaking of which, you talk about meat a lot, I realized.
Because I'm the meat man.
Do you say the word meat a lot?
I'm the meat man.
Okay.
The meat man is back.
I'm with you. Just know that I'm with you. But I'm not going to keep talking because he'll never get to the point.
Oh,
so
God. Okay.
Yeah, you know what
now
I mean?
I yeah. Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Yeah. You got to lay out.
Yeah.
Understood.
That's right. Anyways, I'm assuming a Georgia fan because Vance from Georgia called the Feinbaum show and he was trying to get to his point, but he kept getting interrupted.
Will you shut up? I'm trying to talk to Paul.
Hey, Vance, exactly who is there?
My damn cat.
Oh, okay.
And Mark, that's your future.
How did I get?
When did this even happen, man?
Oh my God!
Having a couple of days on the Feinbaum show, Vance calls in and he's talking and you keep hearing meow, meow, meow. And all of a sudden this guy starts screaming and Feinbaum, I don't think could hear the cat. So he's really confused. He's like, well,
yeah,
I think he thought a domestic dispute was about to happen. Yeah. And it was just Vance's cat.
My damn cat.
I have a complicated history with Paul Feinbaum.
You don't like him, do you?
Why is that?
I respect what he's been able to do with as little talent as he has. I think there's something to be said for that. I also spent a lot of time in college. Remember, the SEC Network and Paul Feinbaum were not around until I was out of college.
He was on Jocks when
he
was around.
On Jocks in Birmingham. And it was the same show. All right, then SEC Network comes around. They hire him. They do all the same thing just on TV. Man, he was not complimentary through most of my college career of things going on in Tuscaloosa or the fan base that would call in. And that's one of the reasons he kind of made a shtick. I'm hoping that shtick for a lot of these personalities is kind of on its way out, to be honest with you. The whole I'm going to say something that outrages your fan base and makes other ones smile and this, that, and the other, and then I'll just take callers that are outrageous. I just I don't know, man. Complicated history. Respect the things he's been able to do. I really do. But not a massive fan of the format. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I echo those same sentiments about other people.
Yeah.
Okay. Just don't. You know, I take shots 24/7 around here, but I just don't think this is the time. I'm trying to keep you out of trouble.
Listen, can I tell you what the definition of trouble is? Me for the next 2 hours by myself. Who the hell? Aren't you supposed to be in charge around here? Nobody checked that decision as a bad idea.
Hey, you know, first off.
Like, you guys have realized at this point, I'm better off, as the third wheel and only speaking when spoken to.
You're going to be able to soft toss it, knock it out of the park.
You're going to
ask yourself questions and then hammer them
Mark,
home.
Mark, what did you say in the break?
Congratulations?
No.
Oh.
About your tombstone.
Oh, yeah. Here lies a guy who should have had better friends and a better agent.
Yeah. Well, it's impossible to have either if you keep talking yourself out of them. All right? And that's what you're doing right now.
Bo Morgan, motivational speaker. Look at that. Hey, everybody, it's Tony Robbins.
You can still change the things. Look, before we get to the end of the show, I do want to bring up the fact that you do get United tonight at 8:30. You do get the Hawks tonight at 7:30. I think that my my remote finger is going to be rolling. Am I supposed to talk about the Yankees?
Yes.
Wait, no.
You get that tonight.
No, at
8:08.
I don't. I'm going to be watching the Hawks at least for the first half. And then I'm going to be flipping over to United. You'll get Jason Longshore and Mike Conti on Star, I believe, Bo.
Yes,
tonight
that's
calling
right.
That game. That'll be really interesting to watch. Then, of course, you'll get Inter Miami here next Saturday in the bins for that matchup. Did you watch the Hawks the other night? What did you think about them? Any feelings of the Hawks, what they might be this season? They got the close victory over the Nets. Should have been a little bit more out of hand, but couldn't hit their free throws, man.
Dude, somebody.
I bet the over 222.5 and had to sweat it out till the final minute where they scored 30 points in the final minute of the game. Yeah.
That's the only way you view sports, ain't it? A money line.
I need to run my locks by him that we picked about an hour ago.
Listen, I'm trying to go to game three with the kids. I need money.
Yeah.
I've had this debate all week long on ESPN.
Trying to take the kids to the series?
I mean, it would cost me at least $7,000.
Yeah.
$7,000 or $8,000 to go. And I'm seriously contemplating doing it.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you had the second highest payroll in Major League Baseball.
I don't care. My kids would remember going to a World Series game at 9 for the rest of their lives. I was talking about my brother and all of our friends. I'm on a group text with all of our kids growing up together. We had to wait 20 years to go to a World Series game, to go see a World Series happen in front of us. Getting my kids to one right now would be a memory for a lifetime.
I completely agree. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing.
What do you have coming up?
What do you have coming up? Since we're already doing the crossover, man. What softball are you going to toss yourself and then subsequently knock out of the park?
Who can't beat who this weekend?
I will get it out of the way, okay? I'll give you my mea culpa like I did on social media about Georgia, Texas. But I also will set the record straight as Mr. Shapiro and Mr. Butler like to misquote me.
Misquoted.
Of course.
Or just misunderstood, man.
That's more like it.
That's the story of your life.
No.
Misunderstood.
There's a lot here, Mike. I wasn't really prepared for a therapy session. But, if you'd like to peel back the covers, I'm willing to to do so.
That's what the listeners can expect for the next 2 hours in the Zen House.
You
kind of
open up for it. You kind of ask for it.
I just make myself an easy target. I mean, yeah. I'm like,
but look, man, you have your
like
thoughts,
Al-Qaeda
you have your
in Iraq,
and you
just
stick
a very
to
easy
them.
Target.
There's something beautiful about that, my friend.
Your
That's gonna do it for us
unreal.
Here on the morning shift. We'll be back with you Monday morning. Hopefully, we're getting a victory Monday out of the Atlanta Falcons this weekend. Enjoy the sporting world this weekend, everybody, and make sure you rise up. Until then, Bo, what do the people of Atlanta need to do?
Stay cool, Zeno.
I will.